Good to be here this morning. See everybody out. It's a little warmer than it was last time I was here. That's nice. This morning I'd like to talk a little bit about Daniel. Go through and read a couple of accounts of Daniel. And just kind of run through and see if Daniel is somebody we need to be like or we should be like. I'll go ahead and say that I think he is somebody we should be like. And I want to go through and look at some of the reasons why I think that we should be like Daniel. And the first reading I want to look at is over in the first chapter of Daniel, starting in the 8th verse and going through the 21st verse. Brother Lincoln. Start out in the 8th verse. It says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me in danger, my head with the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. And Daniel continued even under the first year of King Cyrus." And also let's go over in the 6th chapter and read another passage. 6th chapter, starting in verse 1. It says, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these 3 presidents, whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, the king should have no damage. Then as Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast in the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign in writing that it be not changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which offereth not. Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. And when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed, and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime." You know, just to start that off, I'm going to read those two and give a couple of examples of the life of Daniel, I guess. And there's just a couple of examples, but it shows a lot about a man. Those two things right there. He had a lot of his principles were never wavered. He was a strong-willed individual, and he did things the right way. the Bible is full of counsel of godly men and women that are definitely worthy of us living after and living towards. But I want to pick out Daniel this morning because of the strengths that I see that he has. We can see in that reading, we can see that he started out high up in the, among the children of Israel. In that first reading, verses 3 through 6, if you want to read back through that, we can see that. Well, actually, go ahead and read it. First chapter, verses 3 through 6. It says, "And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, and that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of his king's seed and of the princes, children of him whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, cunning, and knowledge, and understanding science, such as he had ability in them, to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongues of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of king's meat and of wine, which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king." And here, among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We can see that he was a fairly important person in the eyes of this king, and he had been given some stature. Again, over in the 17th verse, let's run to the 17th verse through the 20th. Talks again. It says, "As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams." We've talked about that. He had preeminence among the wise men of Babylon. We read through there. He was communing with the king. I don't think just anybody was able to go in and hang out with the king. You had to be pretty high up to get that privilege. Let's look over to the second chapter in verse 48 and 49. It talks about how he was given power. It says, "Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, chief of the governors, over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king." Daniel was still, he was high up. And we see people nowadays that are high up, and when they get there, you wonder how they got there, first off, and you wonder what they do when they get there. How do you think Daniel got to where he got? That's the first question I want to ask. Especially without compromising any of his skills or the position that he had as a godly man. Without compromising any of his morals, I guess you'd say, any of his faith. He didn't compromise any of his faith, and that's what I wanted to look at Daniel for this morning. Is how did he get there without compromising anything any of his service to God? And I've got four things that I want to look at. The first one, I believe that Daniel had a purpose. And Daniel knew that purpose from a young boy. He knew that purpose. He was in a strange land. And, you know, one of the first things he faced, the first recorded thing that he faced anyway, is that he was forced to make a choice between God's law or the king's law. And eating the king's food. He didn't want to violate God's law. So, despite his youth, and the obvious pressure from all to conform to that law of man, you know, it says that he purposed in his heart to uphold the law of God, and I think I'm pretty sure that he knew what the cost was. If there was going to be a cost, I'm pretty sure he purposed in his heart He weighed the consequences, I'm pretty sure. But he did it anyway. Because he was willing and able to put God first. And I think God granted him that favor in the sight of others because of this. We see that again in chapter 1, verse 9. It says, "Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs." God did that for him. God put him in favor with those people. And it was because of his willingness to put God first. You know, how God did this, who knows? It's not explained. That's not one of those things that we know. But we have seen this before. And just to give a couple of examples, let's turn over to Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 4. It says, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was prosperous, and he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of the master. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight. And he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had, he put into his hand." Also, let's read the 21st and 21st to the 23rd verse. It says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison and whatsoever they did there. He was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it prosper." That's not the only example that we have of this, but that's a pretty satisfying example. Doesn't tell us how he did it, but he did. God is all powerful, and I don't even halfway think to know that I may know what his motives are, but he can do what he wants to do. He has done it. By putting God first, God had blessed Joseph in such a way that also favorably impressed others. You know, being that man of purpose, every child of God, as we are, has to have a purpose. They have to be respected. Nobody respects that guy that sits on the fence and one person comes by and he's on this side, and the other person comes by and he's on that side. It's always, you know, kind of riding both sides. Nobody really cares to be around that person. But, you know, if you have a strong sense of purpose, that often breeds respect and admiration from others. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 6. Chapter 6 and verse 33, we can read about our purpose in life from Jesus. He says, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." That's our purpose in life. Seeking God. Seeking his commandments. That's a huge purpose. And our purpose for that is to be able to get into heaven. Seeking the will of God and fulfilling it in our lives, no matter what the circumstances are. No matter what lies around the corner. Even if we can't see it, we still have to put God first. The next thing, you know, the principles that we have. I can guarantee you that Daniel was definitely a man of principle. He refused to compromise the convictions that he had. As a young man again, talk about that again, he refused to eat the king's meat and drink his wine. As an old man, he sat before Belshazzar. He refused Belshazzar's gifts. Let's look over the fifth chapter of Daniel. Read the account of that. Fifth chapter, starting in the 13th verse. It said, "Then was Daniel brought in before the king, and the king spake unto Daniel, and spake and said unto Daniel, Art thou that Daniel which ordered the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I have even heard of thee, that the Spirit of the God of God is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing, talking about the writing on the wall, and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of that thing, of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing, and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. Listen to what Daniel says. He says, then Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Give everything you just promised me to somebody else. Then he answers the question, yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. He'd been given a gift by God. And he knew that gift was more important, was more powerful than anything anybody else could get. And the king had offered him some worldly goods to do what he had asked to be done, but he knew. He didn't compromise that conviction that he had. Again, over in the 6th chapter, verse 10, it says, now when Daniel knew the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. Being as high up as he was, you know, or I can figure that he knew that writing had been written. And he knew what the consequences were when somebody was going to find out. He knew they were going to find out. The windows were open. He didn't hide anything. He knew that they were going to find out. So under threat of persecution, under threat of death, being thrown into the lion's den, it didn't bother him. He still stuck to his principles. He still stuck to his convictions and did what was right in the sight of God. You know, people admire other people that have those principles. Sometimes you get somebody that will ridicule that person outwardly. But inwardly, I believe that they wish they could have those convictions and the high principles, high morals in their gut. You know, when they know that they need somebody who can be trusted, who are they going to call? That person they can depend on, that person they can trust. Anything that they have, they can get it to them, and they know that it's going to be carried out through any kind of assigned task. They're going to turn to that guy. They're going to look at that guy and know that guy right there. They're going to know that Daniel is the guy to give that to. Daniel's going to get it done. And he's going to do it the right way. You know, I believe that God also admires these individuals that stand up for principles. Let's look over to Psalm. Look at the 15th Psalm. Read that. This is a Psalm of David. Psalm 15. It said, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in the holy hills? He that walketh uprightness and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contempt. But he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changes not. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent. He that doeth these things shall never be moved. We look out into our society nowadays and see all the hurtful things going on, all of the mean, vile things that people do to one another, and we need somebody with some people. We don't need just one, but we need a whole bunch of people that have the principles and those the ability to stand up and do the things that are right. And I believe those that would follow Daniel's example and demonstrate by their examples being led by principle rather than money and the price that they can get for something else. I think they wouldn't just be highly valued by their fellow man, but they're definitely going to be valued by God too. But you know, having purpose and principle, that's not all he had. There's another element that he had. And Daniel was definitely a man of purity. Going back into the sixth chapter, talking about they were trying to find fault in him. They couldn't find fault in him. So, what did they do? They tried to find fault in his service to God. He was definitely faultless when it came to the management of his business affairs. Let's read back through the first, from the first verse into the sixth, fourth verse. It says, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these 3 presidents, of whom Daniel was first. And the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no ban. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom." Here's the kicker. But they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault in found in all of his affairs, as far as the kingdom was concerned, was in order. He was doing what he was supposed to be doing. He was working his he was doing his job like he was working for God, and that's commendable. Doing the duties that were given to him by his I guess you would say his boss, like he was working for God, doing the right thing. I believe this is definitely part of the explanation for his rise to the position that he was in, the great responsibility and the great power that he'd been given by the king. And I think that his purity in the business affairs was definitely related to, one, his overall purpose to please God first. Again, here's another recurring theme that we're having here, putting God first. And also the fact that as a man of principle, he could be trusted. And everybody knew this. Everybody, even the king. How about as Christians? What should we take from this? I think we should also maintain purity of our conduct. Whether we're young or old, look at a couple of examples. First is over in 1 Timothy, chapter 4 and verse 12. I'm not sure how many times I heard this growing up, but it's definitely something to listen to. It says, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Despise not your youth." To me, I don't know if I'm a young man or I know I'm not an old man, but definitely not as young as I used to be. But that's a very important verse that we can pull from, not to despise our youth. Today we see so many people, so many young men, young women, doing things that are definitely not what they're supposed to be doing. And we're commanded not to despise that youth. Also, let's go over in Titus, chapter 2, starting verse 6, to go through 8. It says, "Young men, likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works and doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned. That he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say to him." When we're hanging out with others that we know are not doing the right thing, the last part of that says we should be doing the right thing, so that they may be ashamed of what they're doing and rethink what they're doing maybe. Again, let's keep on going in verse 9 and 10. "Rather we're slave or free. It says, exhort certain servants to be obedient unto their own masters and to please them well in all things, not answering again, not purloining, but showing all good fidelity, that they may adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in all things, purity in our conduct." That's what we need. if we're maintaining purity with our in our dealings with others, we're often given positions of great responsibility and privilege. That's another part of that trust that can be obtained. And the fourth thing I want to talk about Daniel and his greatness. We can see that Daniel was a man of prayer. Chapter 6 of Daniel again, verse 10, read that one more time. It says, "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened into the chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, and as he did aforetime." He knelt in prayer. You know, kneeling, that is definitely a sign of humility. Kneeling before God gives you makes you humble, or it helps you to become humble. And how many times did he do it a day? He prayed three times daily, and I think this is a demonstration of his continual dependence on God. He knew that it wasn't him that was doing this. God was giving him this. And what did he do? He gave thanks. He also gave thanks in the midst of persecution. And I believe that's a demonstration of his gratitude to God, and the fact that he didn't lose sight of that the blessing that God was going to give him. He knew God was giving him blessings. He knew where it was coming from again. His prayer, it says, were accustomed since early days. He said, as he did aforetime. What does that demonstrate? His persistence and his faithfulness and his service to God. It's likely that his custom to do that, to pray so diligently, helped him remain that man of purpose, of purity, of principle, despite his rise in power and his rise in stature in the kingdom. Us as Christians, we should, I think we would do well to follow that example also. What does it talk about prayer? Let's look over at Thessalonians. Real short verse. Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Starting in the 17th verse. Three-word verse. It says, "Pray without ceasing." Pretty powerful. Pray without ceasing. In everything, give thanks. Not just some things. In everything that we're given, everything we do, every breath that we have, every extra breath that we have, everything. Pray without ceasing. In everything, give thanks. For this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. Also, let's look over to Colossians chapter 4, verse 2. Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. Continue in prayer. We're pray without ceasing. Continue in prayer. Pray always. You know, our efforts to live our purposeful, that purposeful, the principle of pure lives, prayer is going to be one of our greatest tools in that journey, in that fight. We have to have a disciplined prayer life. An undisciplined prayer life is definitely going to lead to ruin. Are we willing to follow that example? You know, in conclusion on this, the false assumption there is that if we can get ahead in life, the reason we get ahead in life is, or in this world, is because we conform to the things that that we've been taught by man. That, like I said, that's a false assumption. We don't have to give up those principles and the purity and the all the things that God has given us, all the laws that God has given us. We don't have to give those up to be able to get to places of promise or places that we higher places. We can to end it. We can look at Daniel's example and ask ourselves. how about us? You know, will we follow the example he gave us for the purpose of his life, his life's purpose, the principles that he had, the purity that he had, and giving thanks to God in prayer? I believe that's all I have for this morning.